The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of Karchner Caverns. We'll also visit with our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman. Please contact us with comments at our email address, TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Southern Arizona's fastest-growing synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in Southern Arizona. We're sponsored as well by Jill Rich of Realty Executives, by Environmental Strategies, and by Better Bodies. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. There was a historic event last week. Simon and Garfunkel, the poster boys for 1960s folk rock harmony, are back together, and they walked off to look for America again, or at least to do a concert tour together for the first time in about 20 years. Had a chance to hear these two 61-year-old Jewish guys from Queens last Sunday, and for all the years, they still sound absolutely great. Not that they need any extra publicity, but it's amazing to watch them together again after all these years. As they put it, they have been friends for 50 years, have sung together for 48 years, and have been fighting for 47 years. Sounds pretty typically Jewish to me. This tour is called the Old Friends Tour, which is now really true for Simon and Garfunkel. They are again friends, and they are, well, old. But they still, or rather again, sound splendid. Here's a little of how they sounded in their prime about 35 years ago.
Old friends, old friends, sat on their park bench like bookends, a newspaper blown through the grass. Falls on the round toes of the high shoes of the old friends. Old friends, winter companions, the old men, lost in their overcoats, waiting for the sunset. The sounds of the city sifting through trees settle like dust on the shoulders of the old friends. Can you imagine us years from today sharing a park bench quietly? How terribly strange to be 70. Old friends, memory brushes the same years, silently sharing the same.
There's a line in that song that struck a chord in their concert the other night. How terribly strange to be 70. Clearly for them, the irony of growing old is writ large these days. The words written in their own songs and perhaps on a subway wall or two as well. Like all reunions, there's a certain lovely, bittersweet quality to it. It's more than just preserving our memories, it's reliving them. To be honest, while Simon and Garfunkel now look like 60-year-old Jewish guys, they still sound quite a bit like the splendidly harmonized voice of a generation that was once young and remembers what that was like when they sing.
Was and what a time it was a time of innocence, a time of confidences. Long ago it must be, I have a photograph, preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.
Along the same lines of preserving memories, we commemorated Veterans Day last week, which really began as Armistice Day for the end of World War I, the 11th day of November, 1919, recalling the signing of a peace treaty that ended the war to end all wars, signed at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month at exactly 11 a.m. Some of you more observant listeners may have noticed that World War I did not actually end all war, and so Veterans Day remembers the many men and women who have served our country and fought to keep it free and preserve its heritage of religious liberty along the way. There's a long history of Jews serving in the American Armed Forces, and of course there are Jewish servicemen and women stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan right now, some from my own congregation, Temple Emmanuel. In honor of last week's Veterans Day, we acknowledge their service to our country and offer a prayer for their safe and speedy return. May peace be restored soon and the need for war come to an end, and may all of our veterans come swiftly and safely home. Here's a song and a prayer for peace from Israel, Shir LeShalom. It was also the anniversary a week or so ago of the death of Yitzhak Rabin, and this song, Shir LeShalom, was sung just before he was assassinated in 1995. But originally it was a song of peace after the Six-Day War. It celebrates not the song of victory or even the prayers of the Psalms, just a song of peace. For Veterans Day, Shir LeShalom, a song of peace that's become associated with Yitzhak Rabin but has been an Israeli song for peace for 33 years. And in a less serious recognition of Veterans Day, we've got a bit of an old Mickey Katz routine, Sound Off.
In the hame, you'll never get rich, you old gullets, you're in the Amish lane.
Sound off!
Ain't way!
Sound off!
Drei, vier!
Sound off!
Ain't way! Drei, vier!
Drei, vier!
Inni, minni, meini, mo, the sergeant is a größer schmo, attention for you, so to say, the major is an old AK. Sound off!
Sound off!
Mazel tov!
Mazel tov!
Sound off! Mazel tov! Yip, whoop!
That was Yiddish comedian Mickey Katz with the last ad on Veterans Day. This is also the week we read in our Torah portion of Chayei Sarah about the purchase of the first piece of real estate in the Promised Land by Abraham. That is, the very first land actually owned by Jews in what would later become Israel. The land that was purchased near Hebron was, fascinatingly, a cave. The negotiation for the purchase of that cave takes up much of our Torah portion this week. And it's entirely appropriate that the Torah talk about a great cave, because our guest this morning is a subterranean explorer himself. When we come back, we'll meet that guest, Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of the amazing cave formations of Karchner Caverns. He is its ongoing protector and an active and committed Jew. We'll find out what Jewish caving is all about.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. The greatest Hanukkah on Earth is coming to Temple Emmanuel Sunday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. Join Temple Emmanuel for the largest, most spectacular, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all, featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 5th Annual Festival of Lights. Sing and celebrate Hanukkah with us. Begin by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. and then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choir, our string quartet, Rabbi Sam Cohen and David Freeland, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and two candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this your most memorable Hanukkah ever. This Hanukkah event is open to all, and there's no charge for the show. Come join the fun at the temple. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Sunday, December 14th, beginning at 4:30 p.m., it's the great Hanukkah on Earth at Temple Emmanuel.
We are eminently pleased to welcome our guest this morning, our good friend Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of the amazing living caves of Karchner Caverns, a spelunker of distinction and a committed preservationist who has seen the new big room open to the public just this past week. It was almost 30 years ago that Gary and his partner Randy Tufts of blessed memory first found Karchner Caverns, and they kept it a secret until they were assured it could be protected and maintained, and turned into a remarkable asset for the state of Arizona and our nation. Gary is a longtime and very active member of Temple Emmanuel, and he and his wife Judy and his children David, Julia, and Levi have played important roles in our congregational life as well. We're delighted to welcome you to Two Jewish, Gary.
Oh, hello, Rabbi.
You and Randy discovered Karchner Caverns almost 3 decades ago when you were excruciatingly young. A very Jewish question. Did your mother approve of you going tunneling along under the earth, doing dark, dangerous things?
Well, you know, I have to admit, my mother didn't know. The secrecy thing extended, Randy and I kept it a very tight secret, and my parents weren't aware of the types of activities that I was involved in. And just coincidentally, I was out hiking, searching for caves with my son Levi this last week, and doing some very rigorous bushwhacking in an area that if we had slipped, we would not have come back from. And my comment to him was, if his grandmother knew where I was taking him, she would kill me.
But she's very proud of you.
Yes, I think she is very proud.
Tell us how you first found Karchner Caverns and how that felt.
Essentially, Randy and I were roommates. He had got me started in caving, and we had developed our hobby to the point of where we were searching for caves. And so we searched many of the areas around southern Arizona. The Whetstone Mountains were an area that had a lot of exposure of limestone. We spent a lot of time there. We were rechecking a hill where he had found a sinkhole when he was in high school and had not been able to get in. But on that rechecking, I guess we were just a little bit more persistent, and we got into the cave.
How did it feel once you got a feel for how remarkable the place is?
Well, you know, words, there really aren't words to completely describe it. You know, a dream come true, it's just speechless. A lot of people ask what we talked about, and the reality is we giggled a lot, all right, with glee. But as I look back on it, the emotion is very much like having children. When suddenly you realize that your life has just changed and you now have obligations and responsibilities. And that was really, after the second trip, the feelings that we had.
We'll talk much more with Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of Karchner Caverns, a little later this morning.
My name's Jean. I was so out of shape, I couldn't even get up on my horse.
Jean, a 50-plus Tucsonan, talks about why she went to personal trainer Jeremy Price of Better Bodies.
I knew it was going to be hard work, but after I'd been seeing him for only a week, I felt better about myself.
In their new private facility, Better Bodies makes it easy to lose your body fat fast.
I've lost 35 pounds. I'm wearing clothes I haven't worn for 25 or 30 years. Everything looks better.
After just 6 weeks, Better Bodies promises you a better body, and individual programs start at only $39.99 a month.
By the way, I can not only get on my horse, but I can post in that saddle for hours and hours.
For a free personal evaluation, call Better Bodies at 975-7074.
And I owe it all to Jeremy.
That's 975-7074 or on the web at betterbodiestucson.com.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan of Temple Emmanuel. There's a great story about a guy whose mother gives him two ties for his birthday, a red one and a blue one. He doesn't much like either one, but to please her, as he dresses for dinner, he puts on the red tie and comes downstairs. His mother takes one look at him and says, "So, what's the matter? You don't like the blue one?" So many times in life, we're not satisfied. We're just not getting what we want. Judaism helps teach us how we can find what we need in the world from our God and from those we love. Come to Temple Emmanuel. We'll help. Call 325-4888. Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson, preschool, religious school, adult education academy. Call 325-4888. In keeping with our caving theme today, this week's Torah portion begins with the death of Sarah, Abraham's wife, and his negotiation to buy the cave of Machpelah in Hebron. The acquisition is significant, not just because it is the first ever officially Jewish land held in Israel, but also because the cave of Machpelah today remains a site holy to Jews. It was ultimately the burial site of Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, and Jacob and Leah. This is land that is firmly in the West Bank today, by the way. In Chaye Sarah, the negotiation to buy the Cave of Machpelah is truly an elaborate and oriental negotiation, almost as complex as the efforts to make Karchner Caverns a state park. Ephron, who sells Abraham the land, pretends he would rather give Abraham the cave rather than sell it to him, and Abraham graciously refuses to accept the non-offer, ultimately purchasing the cave for an exceptionally high price. The simple message is that the honorable thing to do is to pay retail. Possibly the last time that was the course of action recommended to Jews. After purchasing the cave and burying his wife Sarah, Abraham moves on to a sticky problem. His son Isaac, now moving towards his 40s and still unmarried. Where will the grandchildren come from? Abraham wonders. Not the last Jewish parent so troubled. He engages his servant Eliezer to find a wife for his rather limited son Yitzchak, Isaac, and Rebekah enters the picture, the strongest and most interesting figure in her generation and a powerful and fascinating woman in any generation. The best scene in this part of Genesis comes when Rebekah is riding back to Canaan on a camel to meet her intended Isaac. She sees him lingering in the field at twilight, perhaps praying there, and she immediately falls off the camel. Either because she is so overcome with Isaac's charismatic good looks, or because she is so disappointed by his appearance. The Torah is remarkably silent on the question. And so a new generation of believers in God begins. I've always felt the abiding message of Genesis, of the entire Torah, and perhaps of all Judaism, is that God has a greater plan, as Paul Simon put it.
God only knows. God makes his plan. The information's unavailable to the mortal man.
And that divine plan works through some of us who seem less than ideally suited for that purpose. But the plan is there, and we can fulfill it if we simply do the best with what God has provided us. When we return, we'll have a Zen Judaism update and enjoy our Jewish poetry slam.
Every once in a while, you want a different sort of day. A day you can be transported in a comfortable coach bus, partake in a wonderful luncheon, and see a show you'll truly enjoy, like Showboat. Min will take you on a journey of pure delight. For entertainment trips to Mesa, Globe, and elsewhere, call Min at 296-1190. The delightful musical Showboat will be performed on the 25th of February in Mesa, Arizona. It's $60 for the whole experience, including the bus, the meal, and the show. Call Min at 296-1190. Ask about their Apache Gold overnight trip, too. It's to enjoy. Call Min at 296-1190.
We are pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Too Jewish, Zen Judaism. To depart is to arrive, to leave is to stay. To say goodbye is to begin a lengthy conversation at the door. Those who know do not kibitz. Those who kibitz do not know. Buying retail is not the way. And finally, enlightenment is a sudden, wordless understanding. Stop telling everyone already. That was a series of koans on Zen Judaism. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from poet Ruth Brin on our portion of Chaye Sarah. We have heard how Rebecca drew water from the well, how Isaac lingered in the field at twilight. When we hear the chanting of this story, we listen to the dimension of time that is forever Israel's. Sometimes, when we lie awake at night, we hear the trains rumbling by, the cars passing, the airplanes overhead. We are listening to the vastness and the distance, the dimension of space that is America's. Twice blessed are we, Lord our God, who may seek the freedom of space and the wisdom of time. Twice blessed are we, Lord our God, that we can hear the chanting of Israel and the night sounds of America. Ruth Brin's poem, The Life of Sarah. When we come back, we'll talk with Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel, and get the news of Jews around the world.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, they really have fun.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Gimel, dalet, hey.
Gimel, dalet, hey.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
We learn and play all day.
We learn and play all day.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, children are welcome from 6 weeks to pre-kindergarten. We've got small class sizes with a low student-to-teacher ratio. Our professional staff is highly trained and nurturing, and the school offers an all-day extended program with a rich learning curriculum including science, art, music, and dance. Of course, Temple Emmanuel Preschool is open to community members of all faiths. We invite you to come for a visit anytime. Just call Lynn or Melissa at 325-0390. Remember, at Temple Emmanuel Preschool,
we learn and play all day.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool on Country Club just north of Broadway. Call 325-0390 or go to templeemmanueltucson.org. So, here you are, enjoying your Sunday morning with Rabbi Sam Kohan, his mavens, and his friends. Isn't it great hearing the variety of in-depth interviews, the traditional and not-so-traditional Jewish music, the news of Jews around the world, and of course the wit and humor that you've come to expect? You know, producing Too Jewish is a labor of love, but we do need your help. We'd like to ask your business to consider advertising right here within our show. By advertising here, you'll reach an educated, affluent audience, an audience that's loyal. It's easy and inexpensive to advertise on Too Jewish. Just call 327-4501. Your call will help guarantee that Too Jewish remains a source for the best of Jewish culture. Please call today, 327-4501. 327-4501. And thanks from your friends right here at Too Jewish.
If you have questions, comments, or criticisms, send it to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. We promise to write back. You can now get CDs of past Too Jewish shows for a nominal cost by calling Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or on the web at templeemmanueltucson.org. Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel, is here with an appropriate subject for our post-Veterans Day show, how Israelis are inducted into the army, which is the most important socializing element in Israeli society. Boker Tov, Danny, and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi. I would like to dedicate today's talk to the young Israelis who will be joining the IDF this month. By Israeli law, men and women are required to serve in the armed forces as of age 18. The IDF has four major recruitment times: February, May, August, and November. The November new recruits are considered the best of the best. I don't want to take away from anyone who wasn't drafted in November, but statistically, this is true. Novembers, as we call them, usually finished high school with diploma and matriculation and are excellent candidates for all prestigious military professions. Just a quick insight on the other three recruitment groups. May recruits are considered renegades, since they are not at school when they turn 18, and so, when they are drafted, many of them are lacking 12 completed years of school. August recruits are considered a mishmash of genius early high school graduates and May leftovers. The general opinion about the Februarys is divided. Some call it a preparation to the May draft, and some the dessert for November. I was a February recruit myself. It may be difficult for non-Israelis to understand, but for us, it's the second most important piece of bio right after our date of birth. Every meeting between two Israelis will include an immediate search for the past acquaintances, and so it will sound something like this. What's your name? Where are you from? When did you enlist in the army? And then, of course, where did you serve? Usually, by the end of these three inquisitive exchanges, we know enough about the other party to decide whether we want to continue the conversation, and if so, who to ask to get more details about our newly acquired friend. Since mandatory service is 3 years, the month you are discharged is usually the same month 3 years later. Many young Israelis mark that day as the beginning of their personal independence. From that day on, they will no longer have to report to someone unless they choose to do so in their line of work. Many are beginning to collect money for the traditional famous world tour that causes many citizens of the world to think that Israel has as many citizens as China, since they could be found on every spot on the globe. So today, Rabbi, I want to congratulate the first graders of 1988 for being released from the army and becoming free birds on their journey to somewhere. And I also wish safe and peaceful service time for the class of 1991. I know your parents fought and prayed that you'll be spared the army experience, but so did my mom and my mother's mom. That is life, as we say, and now it's your turn. So take care out there. We love you, and we think of you always.
Thanks, Danny. It was fascinating. Shavuot Tov. We'll talk next week. When we return, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and spend more time with our guest, Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of Karchner Caverns.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel's cabinet on Sunday narrowly approved a deal with Hezbollah guerrillas, well, terrorists, to swap 400 Palestinian-Lebanese prisoners for four Israelis, an exchange denounced by some Israelis as amounting to a reward for terrorism. The ministers debated for 8 hours before approving the exchange by the whopping vote of 12 to 11. That vote came as Hezbollah threatened to kidnap more Israelis if the agreement collapsed. Under the deal, Israel frees 400 Palestinians and several dozen prisoners from Lebanon, Syria, Morocco, Sudan, and Libya, freedom-loving countries all. Hezbollah will then hand over Israeli businessman Elchanan Tenenbaum and the bodies of three Israeli soldiers. Later last week, Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Kureya presented his new cabinet to parliament, capping a power struggle that left Yasser Arafat firmly in control of the security forces. The deal between Kureya and Arafat is probably the last nail in the coffin of the U.S.-backed roadmap for peace, already paralyzed for weeks by the turmoil in Palestinian politics. It was not clear whether Israel will even resume high-level contacts with the Palestinians, since Arafat's still in charge, although indications are that Prime Minister Sharon is willing at some level. In a bid to stop Palestinian attacks, Israel and the U.S. had hoped to sideline Arafat and see the security services consolidated under an actually empowered prime minister. But Arafat prevailed in the end, which can only continue to hurt the Palestinians. In Berlin, the anti-graffiti coating of the concrete pillars of the National Holocaust Museum was stopped when it was discovered the firm supplying the coating was the same company that supplied the deadly Zyklon B gas used in the Nazi concentration camps' gas chambers. While the supplier, the Degussa Chemical Conglomerate, has publicly confronted its terrible Nazi past and is now led and owned by completely different people, and while it was one of the founders of the Compensation Fund for Nazi slave laborers, the Holocaust Museum felt it would nonetheless be irresponsible to continue to use a product produced by that company. In Russia, oil baron and billionaire Mikhail Khodorkovsky has resigned from his chairmanship of the huge Yukos oil company. Khodorkovsky sits in jail now, brought down by Russian Premier Vladimir Putin, in part because he is Jewish, although mostly because he is too independent of Kremlin control and just as corrupt as the rest of them. Here in America, while membership in Jewish fraternities and sororities has been declining nationwide, in spite of the fact most of them actively seek non-Jewish members now, AE Pi Fraternity has been pursuing a different strategy with great success. The originally all-Jewish fraternity has been seeking to increase how Jewish it is, and it has seen its membership swell dramatically in recent years. Unlike ZBT, the Sammies, and other Jewish fraternities nationwide, who have removed Jewish signs of identity from their logos and literature, AE Pi has actually placed more and more emphasis on Jewish identification. And last year, its undergraduate membership reached a record growth rate. In the last 2 years or so, 21 new chapters have been formed. This in an era in which fraternity membership has been dropping steadily. AE Pi has chosen to grow more Jewish, and that has led directly to it growing dramatically. Mazel tov. It proves that being too Jewish is actually good for you, which we've been claiming for a year and a half now, by the way, even without the scientific proof. In the interest of full disclosure, I must inform you that I was an AE Pi in my long-ago undergraduate days at UCLA, and I was actually the chapter advisor at an AE Pi house in Santa Barbara in the late 1980s, so I actually feel some random nachas about the whole thing. Minneapolis last week, the Reform Movement went through a name change. The 135-year-old Union of American Hebrew Congregations, the great umbrella organization of Reform congregations, and the oldest synagogue association in America, officially voted to become the Union for Reform Judaism. What's in a name? In this case, an official acknowledgement that member congregations are Reform Jews in name as well as fact. The name change has been proposed for several years, but this time it passed, overwhelmingly. And in Dallas, a little earlier, Chancellor Ismar Schorsch, the rabbi who heads the Jewish Theological Seminary, sort of the leader of the conservative movement, declared at their biennial convention that the 50-year-old ruling that allows conservative Jews to drive on Shabbat was, quote-unquote, a mistake. By sanctioning travel on the Sabbath, Schorsch declares, the conservative movement gave up the desirability of living close to the synagogue and creating a Shabbos community. Many voices within the conservative movement were raised in protest, probably from automobiles. No word from Schorsch on the unofficial ruling that seems to permit conservative Jews to play golf on Shabbat, go shopping in malls, and drop their kids at soccer and baseball games. It's notable that the National United Synagogue Conservative Movement Biennial drew only about 500 attendees this year, while the Reform Movement Biennial Convention a week later drew about 5,000. There is no real doubt anymore which movement is the largest, most effective, and most active in America, is there? And in our ongoing saga of the red string, Winona Ryder was spotted wearing the pseudo-Kabbalistic good luck charm bracelet last week. Well, at least Winona is Jewish. I did wonder if she bought or shoplifted the bracelet, though. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back our guest, Gary Tenen, co-discoverer of Karchner Caverns. Gary and Randy Tufts, his partner, found Karchner Caverns while out spelunking in 1974 and realized they'd discovered a true natural wonder, a magnificent living cave with a marvelous array of gorgeous and spectacular formations. Recognizing the potential danger of environmental damage or destruction and feeling a profound sense of stewardship, they kept their discovery a closely guarded secret until they could secure an institutional custodian and make an appropriate arrangement to develop, preserve, and maintain the caves in their nearly pristine condition. This week, the big room opened at Karchner Caverns, and having been the recipient of a private tour led by Gary just in advance of the opening, I can tell you it is astonishingly beautiful and a fantastic experience, really a religious experience. Brings new appreciation for the wonders of nature and for God's ability to create. Gary is an active member of Temple Emmanuel, and his day job is running an Alpha Graphics printing company. He and his wife Judy have three great kids, one of whom, his daughter Julia, makes the best challah in southern Arizona, and the youngest of whom, Levi, is perhaps the best shofar blower of his age in Tucson. We're delighted to welcome back Gary Tennant to Too Jewish. Gary, you've said that you knew you could protect Karchner if it was turned into an economic asset for the area. Whose idea was it, and how did you try to make that happen?
As we agonized over how to protect the cave, because we had seen so many caves that had been vandalized, and this cave had many factors that made it very difficult to protect. It was, once you got past the tight crawlway, very easy to navigate through the cave. The rooms were large. There weren't any large barriers like pits and things that would discourage people from touring the cave. It was very fragile. Everything was, you know, on the floors, on the walls, it was filled with formations. It was near a road. You can see the road from the entrance. It was near a freeway. It was near a population center. And all those things we thought would make it impossible to protect over the long term. If we discovered it, someone else could rediscover it. And it was sort of an evolution. I think Randy probably had the original idea. He had been traveling around the country, had seen a lot of tour caves, and quickly realized that this cave was as good or better than many tour caves. And we evolved our thinking to realize that all those disadvantages, when viewed from a different perspective, were really advantages for a tour cave. And with that, we could then control access, pay for stewardship, provide science research and study of the cave. And we decided that. And it took about 2 years, 2.5 years for us to realize that that would be the best way to protect this cave, given its location.
There's a fundamental Jewish teaching about the environment, Bal Tashchit, do not destroy. Did that play a role in your response to protecting Karchner Caverns?
Not at any conscious level, Rabbi.
Must have been a subconscious, a genetic level even.
Maybe.
Do you feel a sense of pride in being able to know that you've created something that'll, God willing, be maintained for generations?
Absolutely. It is exactly what we had hoped for, is that the cave will be protected beyond our lifetimes.
You know the scientific processes involved in creating caves. You pretend you don't, but you really know all of that magnificently. Do you think God plays a role?
Absolutely. I think we'd be challenged to determine exactly what role, but clearly. And most people who travel through Karchner have a profound spiritual experience.
In Jewish tradition, caves play an oddly important role. This week's portion, we read of the Cave of Machpelah, sort of the first prominent cave in Jewish tradition. In your opinion, why would Abraham choose a cave for his family's final resting place? And is there something spiritual in general for you about a cave?
There's certainly something inspiring and spiritual, and certainly for many people, there's a sense of security, I think, in caves, and a sense of being close to other people, close to nature, and very much involved in part of the world.
You feel like you're sort of literally within the world.
Well, yes.
Maccabees hid out in caves near Modin when they were fighting the Syrian Greeks, and you brought me a piece that shows that they actually couldn't celebrate Sukkot because they were, at the time, hiding out from Syrian Greek armies. When they finally got to Jerusalem and they dedicated the temple, they had Sukkot late, which is where Hanukkah comes from. Any celebrations you think that we should transfer into caves? I know you've done a lot of interviews, so I'm trying to find questions nobody's ever asked you before.
I'm not prepared for this one. I don't know that we should be using caves for other than to gaze at their beauty and to keep them in the pristine condition. I think there's lots of instances, certainly where where in the Hebrew Bible, where people have found safety in caves and shelter in caves, and I think that's a nice aspect of caves.
Elijah hiding out from Ahab and Jezebel, right. Elijah on Mount Carmel, series of David hiding from Saul.
Certainly. Sure. Maybe in my subconscious I've hid out from the world also in caves. It's a nice place to go when you want to clear your mind from all your worldly troubles. Caving helps.
There's a formation in the big room that several of us immediately called the Torah, I think you among them. Are there any other Jewish-looking formations down there, in your opinion?
Well, you know, in the throne room, there is a formation that looks very much like a yod, the pointer, a Torah pointer. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Nothing else comes to mind, but the yod is I think, quite striking.
Now, you did mention that one of the formations is called cave pastrami, kosher cave pastrami.
Yes.
Now, other people would call it something else.
It is called by others cave bacon, and I'm just tired of... of calling it that. So
in the interest of protecting kashrut.
So I now call it the cave pastrami.
So is Kashrut Caverns therefore a kosher cave?
I don't think bats are kosher, Rabbi.
What? They're not. Actually, you're quite right.
So and that's the only thing in the cave that's really edible. There are other things that are named after food, but there's really nothing to eat in caves except bats and their guano.
What percentage? I don't think one of those I'd want. I don't think I want to eat either one of those. Tell you the truth.
Kosher or not, right?
Kosher or otherwise. What percentage of Kashrut Caverns is open to the public now? And explain how you guys arrived at that.
I think in round numbers, about 50% of the cave is open to the public. The remaining half will never be developed for a variety of reasons. First of all, the idea to develop Karchner's tour cave was really a protection method. If we developed the whole cave, we would defeat that. We believe the cave should be left untouched in its pristine state. There's some real difficulties in developing some of those other sections of the cave, as pretty as they might be.
Will anybody be able to go see them? For example, if you wanted to go see the parts of the cave that are not developed?
I imagine that if I asked to go caving in Karchner, that people, I probably wouldn't be told no, but Randy and I never used Karchner as a recreational cave. When we want to go caving, we went elsewhere. The cave is much too fragile, and I just have really no interest in going to the back section. It would not be good for the cave.
A cave is a kind of a living ecosystem. You might, when it's alive, you might see it as kind of a model for the whole universe, the whole world in its own way. Explain why Karchner is a living cave, but virtually every other tour cave around is not.
Well, actually, most tour caves in the country are living caves because they're wet.
I take that back.
Okay. Here in southern Arizona, because it's a dry environment, the other tour cave happens to be a dry cave,
Colossal Cave. Right.
Karchner is exceptionally wet, and actually portions of the cave flood and the water can remain for months and you have an underground lake, which is highly unusual for southern Arizona.
The largest cave, of course, the National Park in New Mexico, Carlsbad Caverns, is not a living cave complex. Is that correct?
Well, certainly much of Carlsbad is living. You have over 100 miles of passage in Carlsbad. Areas that have been developed have certainly dried out, and it's some of the examples from how, in developing Karchner, Carlsbad was used as an example of how not to do certain things.
Because human impact destroys the conditions necessary for caves to grow?
Well, unmitigated human impact can really be devastating to the cave, and things like lunchrooms in caves, as Carlsbad has, or large elevator shafts that seem to suck the air out, can be very destructive for caves. At Karchner, Arizona State Parks has done an admirable job of installing environmental doors to contain the cave environment, keep out the desert environment. We still have challenges. The cave is much drier today than was predicted in the baseline studies that were done, and we just don't know why. We don't know how much of it is attributable to the regional drought and how much of it is through the actual development process.
Those doors are like airlocks, really, and it's very much like getting into a spaceship or something, I imagine it would be. And the idea is to try to catch every aspect of human impact that might hit the cave and then protect the cave from that?
Yes. Control of lint, which seems insignificant, but if you think about your clothes dryer and the mat of lint that you get just from a load of laundry, you can imagine what hundreds of people going through a cave could deposit. And many caves have had lots of trouble. They'll develop carpets of lint off to the sides of trails. Karchner takes a number of steps to reduce that effect. You get misted to help dampen the lint, and the retaining walls help catch the lint. And then the airlock doors, once again, keep the air in, the very humid air in, and the very dry air out.
Caves are 95% humid or something?
Well, they ought to be 99.5%.
Wow.
And it's a cave like Karchner was virtually at very close to 100% humidity. And we've had a drop of a couple percentage points, which doesn't seem like a lot. It's still, of course, very humid, but a drop, but that represents a huge drop in going from 99.5% to, let's say, 97% or something, is a huge drop in humidity. And what you have to guard against is to keep the cave wet, you have to have more water entering the cave than leaving the cave. It's pretty simple. I think at this point, we probably have more water leaving the cave
than entering. Gary, your partner, Randy Tufts, died tragically just a few years ago, a couple years ago.
A year and a half, yeah.
Do you feel that this has become a kind, it was always a trust for you, as you described, it's like having a child. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that level of responsibility is intensified for you?
I think that it was pretty intense for each of us, and I don't know if it could get any more intense, Rabbi.
Is it true that you made Judy sign a non-disclosure agreement on your second or third date?
I think it was the second date. I knew there was something there in that relationship. I could sense it, and so
just sort of like you knew there was going to be something when you looked for Karchner.
Yes, probably. And so I sat down on the second date and said, you know, if this relationship's going to go any further, there's really something I have to tell you. But first, you'll need to read and sign this document. I'm surprised you just didn't leave.
Yes. I think she's still a little surprised herself. How do your kids feel about Karchner Caverns?
I think they're real proud of it, although I have to say that there's sometimes a certain lack of enthusiasm. If I say, let's go out to Karchner, they look at me like, oh, not again.
People travel from all over the world to come see this, but your kids have had enough.
But no, I think they're very excited about it and very pleased.
I'd like to thank Gary Tenen for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome, Rabbi. I'm glad to be here.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming to Temple Emmanuel Sunday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. Join Temple Emmanuel for the largest, most spectacular, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all. Featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 5th Annual Festival of Lights. Sing and celebrate Hanukkah with us. Begin by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. And then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choir, our string quartet, Rabbi Sam Cohen and David Freeland, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and two candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this your most memorable Hanukkah ever. This Hanukkah event is open to all, and there's no charge for the show. Come join the fun at the temple. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Sunday, December 14th, beginning at 4:30 p.m., it's the greatest Hanukkah on earth at Temple Emmanuel. Thank you for joining us this morning on Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends. You can contact us at 327-4501 or at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Come back next Sunday at 10 right here on 990 AM KTKT.
Thanks for being here. Join us next week when our guest will be Stephen Fried, author of the terrific book, The New Rabbi. Our playout this morning comes from the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars, Von der Chuppa, a jazzy piece of klezmer music. My friends, have a good morning and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.